Welcome to Get in the Herd, a podcast about addiction and recovery brought to you by the McShin Foundation. If you or a loved one are looking for real discussions about addiction, recovery, stigma, advocacy, and most importantly, hope, then stick around. Thanks for joining us. Now sit back and get ready for another great episode of Get in the Herd.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the award-winning recovery podcast, Get in the Herd, brought to you by the McShin Foundation. Today is a very special day for many, many reasons. Today's Tuesday, and it's the first full episode where we have a brand new producer of the show, and we miss Justin terribly, but I do want to re-welcome because he's been on the show as a guest twice now, and he sat back there a few times. But we want to welcome Art as our producer. Art back there. We don't have a camera on you, Art, but you know, if you want to say hello to the crowd.
I am here. Hello, everyone.
Certainly, what I like about Art is the way he's succinct in a way, in ways where I am not. Is that a word that we need to look up? Succinct?
Possibly, yeah.
To the point, short to the point.
Short and to the point. That's
yep.
me.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Me, I'm just short.
I'm just pointless.
Well, so I'm your host today, Nathan Mitchell. And I think all you know that. And welcome. Our guest today is Bobby N. Bobby N, man, you are a participant in our housing.
Yep.
You are a participant in our intensive male program house.
Yep.
How long have you been here?
Technically about 15 days with another 12 before that, but I restarted, so
technically about
17 days, something around there. I'm not counting. I'm just okay on the ride, you know what I mean?
17 days. Oh, and 12 days before.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So what happened?
Oh man, I wasn't ready, man, and I was going through it. Came here, you know, relapsed. Really, what really happened was I heard. So it was two things. It was what the staff gave me the medication too early. That threw me into the reciprocated withdrawal.
Okay, yeah.
And I lost my shit. And I
you can say shit. Don't use the F word if you can avoid it.
But yeah, so
only honesty uses the F word.
So basically, that caused me to relapse. And then I was given another chance. I was sent to another place. And there was I was supposed to be picked up from there on a Friday, but nobody showed up
from us.
Yeah.
Oh.
I was told I was supposed to call, but I don't think I was told that. But either way, everything happened for a reason. It worked out, even though I relapsed again. And then I got scared and knew that my chances was up. And then I was ready. And then I came back and I've been doing great.
You brought up precipitated withdrawal. For those who may not know what that is, and this is your first time experiencing that, correct?
Yeah.
Would you explain what that is?
It is the worst physical anything I've ever been through. It's something that basically what it is the medication rips the opiates off your receptors and it throws you into an instant devastating withdrawal. It sucks the life out of you. You have no energy. You're dead. All the fluids leak out of your eyes, ears, nose, and you're screwed for the next like 8 to 10 hours at least.
I have to admit, as you're describing that, the first thing that comes, because I'm silly, there's a scene at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know what I'm talking about? Where the face melts when the Nazi looks at the Ark. You have no idea what I'm talking about, do you?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Literally feels like your soul is being sucked right out of you.
It's pretty bad. That happened to me while I was at Tucker's.
It's,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what happens is you haven't fully. So explain. Was that a good explanation of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely that's it. That's a pretty vivid explanation. It's just when you take something like Suboxone or I don't know if methadone does it, but it's definitely the buprenorphine.
Yeah.
You take it too early and you still have other opiates in your system and they kind of just
it's over.
It just yeah, it's bad. It's yeah, it's like it's with it's being sick but like times 50 or 100, you know, it's a lot.
Yeah. Well, how do we get past, or how did you all get past the precipitated withdrawal?
Relapsed. Either that, yeah, that, or you just keep continuing to take Suboxone on the hour, every hour, and until you're out of it. But there's really nothing you can do unless, I mean,
that's what they told me.
You can get high, or, you know, but
it's like, you're just gonna have to
sit tight, yeah,
lay on the couch for at least 6 hours, man. I don't know what to tell you. I said,
and now with the fentanyl, it's because before, you know, you'd get buprenorphine, after taking heroin, but with the fentanyl out there, it just stays in your system a lot longer. So, you know, even 9 days after I was at Tucker's, like I took the Suboxone and I still went into precipitated withdrawal. Oh, so,
after yeah. 9 days.
Yeah.
Wow. That's scary.
Yeah. I almost shit myself.
Wow.
Ouch.
Well, that's so that honest program. Yeah. I mean, well, no, that's yeah. Honest program indeed. But, you know, it's like, so we talk about the challenges of, you know, when I hear people talk about, you know, well, just stop using, just stop.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, well, and you know, if I'm being completely honest, for a long time, I was one of those people saying, well, why don't those people just stop using? Because right. It was never I never had a problem. You know, it was over. You know, I was doing my stuff casually. I was fine. Yeah. I was okay.
Crazy as it is, though, that's to us, it's just it makes us mad. Like it's never that simple, but that is the answer, though. That's where it starts.
Yeah,
is you got to stop using to get to where you want to go.
How likely is it to get into a place, you know, to stop using, to make a decision to stop using, and how likely is someone to do it on their own? How likely was it for you?
Oh man, you know,
I think it's a loaded question, actually. Yeah, it's a bad question.
I've done forgot most of the question, but I'll just say this.
I appreciate that honesty.
Yeah. So, on my own, I wasn't necessarily ready. Like I only relapsed. I was out there for like a month messing up.
Yeah.
Which I already been through this a long time ago. And it just brought all the memories and fears of what's about to happen. I could foresee what was about to happen. It like hooked me within like 2 weeks and it scared me. So I still wasn't ready to do it on my own yet because I didn't really feel like I was doing too much. But either way, I knew it was bad. So if it weren't for my girlfriend and my family, and then me just feeling like shit and knowing that what the consequences are about to be like if I kept going, I wouldn't have I probably wouldn't have did it yet. But yeah, so on my own, I probably would have did it, but a little bit, probably like another month later maybe or something like that. But
an optimist over here.
But coming here, man, it's I can't believe where I'm at right now just already compared to where I was just like a month ago.
Yeah.
How I feel physically, mentally, even though there's a lot of bullshit with, you know, things you don't want to do and you don't agree with and the staff not doing what they say they do sometimes, but it's all happened for a reason. I didn't come in here. I've been on Suboxone for a long time. I didn't come in here to get off Suboxone. Well, guess what? I'm all fucking Suboxone.
Oh.
And that's amazing in itself, man. So.
Well, how did you find the McShin Foundation?
So, my girlfriend's got a friend. Well, it's a mutual friend. Jill and I used to work here. So we go way back.
You and Jill do?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yep. And she, I guess, talked to some people and blessed me with the opportunity to get my life together.
Yeah. Jill's a sweetheart.
She is, man.
Yeah. Yep. Did you know Jill or had she already, she was already gone by the time you got here, right?
Yeah. Dixie was the
I have no idea.
Director.
I have no idea when she left.
I did. I know who she is. She was at Dixie's 3-year celebration. So I know who she is.
Yeah,
nice lady.
She is a super nice lady, and she's a super nice lady. I've got a lot of love and respect for her and how she, you know, watching her because when I first got to the McShin Foundation, she was the med person.
Oh.
You know, and actually I'm pointing over there, but the med office used to be downstairs. There's a door, you know, the office that has a door that doesn't quite go all the way to the top.
It's a detox room.
Yeah. That actually used to be the med room. And that door, Art, you may have been here. Maybe you weren't, but that door used to have a, like one of those split doors. You know,
the two-way open.
Yeah. Well, you know, it opened, like the top would open and you could leave the bottom down.
Okay, yeah,
and there was a little ledge, you know,
they're like, here's medicine on the counter.
Exactly. Oh. Yeah. I think we call that a Dutch door or something like that. That I hope that's not pejorative, but that was where the meds were. And I remember, I never had meds that went through her. So I didn't really have much interaction, but I always saw her and laughed and talked. And because it was her office, she'd always be, you know, kind of hanging off the door there, you know, and you see her, you know, you talk to her and she, you know,
super friendly.
She is super friendly, but also very protective and very, you know, responsible with her women, you know, and the team. And so, you know, when she became, let's see, I think she was the assistant. I don't know. I left for a little while and then I came back and she was assistant program director, I think. Maybe she was the full program director, but you know, she took over the women's program and you know, she just super and this is a whole big giant show about Nell. Jill. Anyway, hey, there's Roger. Hey, buddy. But anyway, Jill's amazing. Yeah. So you know Jill, you got here. You know, so tell me, walk me. So I don't sit here and talk about Jill all damn day. I can't tell you how much I love her. Clearly, I love her. Tell me about, so once you got here, you know, and you found this place, and your girlfriend found this place.
Yeah. Between her and Jill, they.
Well, how did you make a decision to change? You know, or was there an ultimatum?
The ultimatum was life and death. And not only that, it's my family and everything, my business and everything that I have at risk. It was all on the line. And I've already know how bad addiction can get. And I just know the longer I carried on, the worse it was going to get. And I just care a lot about what the people I love think about me. And I know that I was disappointing people. And I was like, fuck, done with it, man. And I just said, okay, I'm doing it. I'm just going to do it because I didn't feel like I felt like I could get way worse. Like, I didn't feel like I was that bad, but it was bad enough to where I didn't want to get clean for 10 days to show my girlfriend that I could do it because she wouldn't let me come home. She's like, all right, you're not coming home until you get clean. I'm like, well, then I'm not coming home. Let me come home and get clean. She wouldn't let me. So I was kind of hard headed and was like, well, fuck it. I'll just do whatever I want to do then. And I'll see you next month, I guess, or whenever. And then I realized, okay, a month went by. I was like, oh, shit, feels like it's been 4 days. It's been.
So you were out of the house for a month. Yeah. And they had this option presented to you.
No, it didn't get offered until the very end.
Okay, okay.
And that's when I was just like, okay, I'll do it. I'm going to do it. So I did it.
So all right, let me see. Let me clarify, make sure I'm hearing you correctly. So at a point, there's a point where your girlfriend says, you're screwing up. Mm. You got to go and get fixed. You fix yourself, right?
Right.
And she says, you say, well, all right, well, I'm going to do that here. And she says, no, you can't do that here. Mm. And you say, all right, well, fine, I won't. Right. And then you go out for a month and you're living rough.
Well, I didn't plan on going out and trying to mess up, but that's just what happened.
Okay. Yeah.
Like I was, and it wasn't even the people, places, things. I was around good people. I went out of my way to mess my life up.
And well, welcome.
Yeah.
Seriously, welcome.
And it was just day by day. I tried not to do it for like 2 days. I didn't do it for 2 days, and then I did it again. Then I did it for like 10 days, and then I stopped for like 6 days, and I got through it. And then I messed up again for another like 12 days. And I was like, okay, man, you know, I'm tired of fighting. Like, let's just fix this problem the best way that we know how instead of Bobby thinking that he knows everything.
So after a month of Bobby trying to do it, you know, how did you get to that point? So what happened when you got to that point? I'm not doing this. I need some help. You know, hey.
Well, one of the big first things that happened was, like in the first couple of days of me relapsing, I want to say it was my girlfriend that sent me a meme of, I think it was the situation, Mike, the situation. And it said something
Gym
like
tan laundry. Yeah.
Yeah, man. It said something like when you're in recovery and you relapse, And you wake up and it's 2 months later. And that made my stomach hurt because it had already been like 7 days and it felt like it's only been a day. And I could see that's where it was going. If I kept going, it was going to be 2 months, 6 months, I'm dead or whatever. Mm. I was like, I'm not doing this again, man. I'm not living this life again. And I've been on this road, man, and I'm not trying to be, I'm not doing it. I'm just not, I wasn't going to accept it. I have a son, I have people who love me, I have people who count on me. I want to be able to take care of the people I love and the people that matter to me. I want to be able to help the people I care about and even anybody that I can help in life. I have a bigger purpose and it ain't to be buried yet. So
I feel that. Well, and you're a betting man, and that's not a good bet.
Yeah.
Well, so what I'm getting at. Right. So here's what I want to hear from you is okay, you're at that month part, right? Mm-hmm. And you're over here by yourself doing your thing. Yep. You know, I live in rough, maybe living in hotels. Well, I don't know what you're doing.
I wasn't good, but just living good. Just getting high, man.
Getting high. Yeah. But you weren't living at home. Mm-mm. You're not taking care of your girlfriend, your son.
Oh, I was doing that too. Paying all the bills.
Well, you're not there present with them.
No.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Maybe money wise, maybe.
Yeah,
okay.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Yep.
Well, and that's, but what happened at that moment? Because see, there's a moment that I'm trying to hear that I want to hear from me. Cause these are the moments that are important to me.
Okay.
And it's like, well, what is that moment where you said, hey, I can't do this. You know, who was it who said, hey, there's this other thing? I mean, obviously McChinn is where you went to, but I mean, where was that moment? Did you ask for help? Did she come back to you and say, hey?
I knew that moment was in progress from the day I relapsed.
Yeah.
Either was going, because honestly, it was, you know, I was going to do it one time while my girlfriend was on vacation. I wasn't going to do it again. And then when she kicked me out, well, then that's when I was like, okay, F it. But when I started to keep doing it day after day, I had already immediately known that I'm not doing this for long, for real. And I know how bad it can get. And it's on my mind every day. Like, I got to stop one way or another. And it just got to where I couldn't control how I felt as far as getting high. Like, I just didn't care about anything. I was just going to do it. And then once I felt that, I knew that something's got to give. I can't do this no more. I'm ready to get help. Help me. Like, help me. Somebody help me. Like, Lauren, my girl, help me. And she's like, well, if you really want help, you can go here. I was like, all right, I'll go. And I mean, that was it. I just knew what the outcome was going to be, man, before I even got too deep.
I don't know.
Is that what you're looking for?
It is. I'll tell you why I'm pressing this point. This is a whole Nathan thing. And whether it's you or Art or anybody else, I'm a man of moments.
Right.
And when I'm deep in my crappy thoughts, when I'm in that stinking thinking, you know, there are certain moments in my life that I cling to that are either really, really bad or really, really good. And when I have a sense of purpose, when I'm walking in that sense of purpose, when I'm walking in that purpose and I'm living that, you know, I'm doing the next right thing and the next right thing and fixing myself for trying to fix myself when I screw up, which I do, obviously, you know, there are those moments that I cling to and go back to and they're moments of gratitude for me.
Right.
You know, I talk about the socks and I'm grateful for the socks. I talk about that really pivotal moment where I got out of the car, you know, when I got out of jail,
right.
You know, and I'm getting in the car with the same person who'd called the cops and I'm offered, you know, meth and Klonopin right there in the parking lot. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing this. Right. And I get out of the car. But then I can think about if I really want to extend those moments, you know, I can start putting all the other things on that and that can be overwhelming for me. You know, it's like I can extract meaning out of one particular moment and I can hold that feeling until, you know, to ride out whatever crap I'm going through instead of playing that whole darn, you know, oh well, but this happened and that happened and this and that, my life is shit. You know, the next thing I know, for me, you know, I'm a man of moments. I cling to that. So there's these times and there are these negative moments in my life too that I'll go back to and I'm like, I'm grateful I'm not doing that.
Right.
You know, there's one particularly profound moment that I'm not going to talk about right here, but one particular profound moment that for 11 months, the first 11 months of my recovery was the image that came up in my brain every time I thought about using. Mm-hmm. I'm really grateful that was part of my early those 11 months, because it was the moment I reflected on about how low Nathan can go as a human being.
Where you don't want to go back to,
man. I don't want to go back to, right. And grateful to not be doing that. And when I got to 11 months, I was talking to my sponsor at the time, and I was really quiet, and then I finally just erupted with my sponsor. I was like, "What's the freaking point?" You know, every time I feel like using, this is what pops up, and I feel like a piece of shit, blah, blah, you know, and all this stuff. And I realized, you know, it was time to grow from that and not cling to that moment, or at least not put the weight of that moment, you know, still, you know, in my recovery. It was important because I learned the moment when I'm with my sponsor, I'm like, oh, yeah, I need to start getting into some forgiveness of myself. You know, I need to start forgiving myself for that, for what I had done, you know, right before I got clean. So, or got into recovery, if we're using, you know, non-stigmatizing language. And that's an important moment too. So now I can I have more perspective on that one moment, and I'm still grateful for it. Like that was a really, really tough time in my life, that one moment that kept me clean for 11 months. And I'm grateful for it now. Yeah. You know, I have that perspective.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah.
But I'm grateful that you found this place. So you got here and you had your first 12 days and you slipped up.
Yep.
Okay. Life happens. You're back, and you're about 15 to 17 days now. Mm-hmm. You know, walk me through. You've gotten off of Suboxone, which you hadn't planned on,
right?
Which means you're free.
Yeah, I'm free, man.
Yeah. How's that feel? How's your body feel?
Body feels great, man. I feel like I can do some things now, man. First 10 days was just miserable. Couldn't do anything. Every step felt like 1,000 pounds. Between that, the anger, like I've never been more angry in my life.
Welcome.
Like seriously, little things would annoy me, man. Like just wanting to choke people out. Like I couldn't stand what people, you know, wasted. I felt like my time was being wasted so much. I was getting so irritated. But man, keep coming back, right? Came back every day to this place, man. And it's added up rather quickly, and it's amazing, man. It's amazing that I can feel this good so soon.
Yeah.
And not just from the relapse, man. I think the Suboxone really crushed me way harder, because the withdrawals and the consequences from using that stuff, man, it's just as bad, if not worse.
Yeah.
So for me to feel like I feel now is this a blessing in itself. It's a miracle. It's night and day.
Yeah.
Already.
Well, let's go into the philosophical side of things. So from an addiction standpoint, you know, there are some people, you know, in the rooms that'll say something like to the effect of, when we pick up and start using, that's when we stop growing emotionally.
I've heard that.
And I believe that to an extent.
I agree exactly.
Yeah.
To an extent. It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Because I can relate how I feel to about the last time I can remember being halfway sober. Like, I feel like I haven't grown. Actually, I feel like I've declined.
Well, okay. I think that's pretty valid too.
I feel like I got to regrow again.
I got
to teach myself how to be a man and responsible and humble and honest and everything again.
How old are you? 31? 35. Oh, you're 35. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, in my early 20s, late teens, you know, I felt like I could conquer the world.
Same,
you know, that I feel immortal. I feel like I'm, you know, I'm invincible.
Definitely.
And I'm sure there's a natural declination of that, or a lot of people decline of that.
Oh.
You know, yeah, I'm sure most people, I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, I look at teenagers in early 20s today and oh, those kids over there. I think it's beautiful. I love that. And I try not to squash that because, I mean,
it's
really.
Part of life, man.
Yeah, it's part of life, and enjoy that time.
Until they break their legs.
Yeah.
And then, not so much.
Or until they decide to take a nosedive three stories off of a banister. That's how I broke my teeth.
Say, yeah. Take it, you must know a little bit about that.
I mean, you know. But that feel, those feelings, you know, kind of, I mean, I don't know what made me start using. You know, it's like it's a chicken and the egg. Well, I don't know if it's a chicken and egg question, but it's certainly a, you know, did I use because I had it in me predisposed because, you know, I have addicts in my family, or I have people
right.
with substance use disorder in my family,
yeah.
or, you know, who knows? I've stopped. I'm inquisitive. You know, I'm interested in that, but from a purely academic standpoint, at this point, it doesn't really matter to me how I became the way I am.
Right.
Now it's like, okay, now how do I accept who I am?
Right.
And you and I were talking just before the show a little bit about this. Well, this is what I got from the conversation, because you were talking about me being at ease talking with people. And I was in my head thinking, man, I wouldn't have said that about myself several years ago, you know, right. Maybe 2 years ago. Maybe there's definitely a certain ease that I feel now. And I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you. I'm much more at ease with who I am as a person, which makes me at ease talking to just anybody. Yeah. More at ease talking to anybody.
Right.
You know, I still have my inherent biases that come out, and I work on that because I do want to be the best self with everybody, and I don't want to be taken advantage of either.
Right.
Because, you know, some people say kindness is a weakness, and
sometimes people take it for that.
People might take that, and I'm sort of going off the point. But we were talking about being able to talk to people, and I thought, you know, the reality is that I know that every single one of us needs to eat, needs to sleep, and in my heart, I believe this. I maybe it's true, maybe it's not, but I think every single one of us wants to have a sense of purpose. You know, the food, the water, the sleep thing, those are like everybody needs that,
survival.
Like survival things, right. Like, you know, not a, you need to have a safe place to go to the bathroom, you know, the base, you know, if we talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, those mm-hmm. base things right there. And, you know, sense of purpose is not in that bottom layer. It's in the top towards the top, but
it gives you sanity,
fulfillment
of life. It gives you something to be passionate about that means something to you, that touches your heart, yeah. Make you want to do it and live and wake up every day.
And so many of us, when we get here, have experienced, well, I think there's a couple different things that people experience when they get here, but so many people when they first get here have either lost that or they've never had that
yep.
sense of purpose.
Yep.
And I'm sad for that. And the reason I'm sad for that, and I know that the way things are structured here, we take that into account. You know, from the very beginning of the day, you know, when we get here in the morning, we talk. You know, we have a little morning meditation,
right?
Yep. You know, and it's very intentional that we all get together and mm-hmm. we clean this church.
Yeah.
You know, it's a sense of buying into the community, mm-hmm. having a purpose within that community.
Yep.
You know, I think I was talking about this in group the other day. My favorite tour was always going around and collecting trash from all the offices mm-hmm. because I get to talk to everybody.
Yep.
You know, and that's me. I'm gregarious. I like to talk to people. I'm nosy, inherently nosy, but I'm also always trying to be a little better than I was the day before. And that's selfish, I think, a little ego driven. There's a balance for that.
There's a balance.
Well, there's a balance. It's how I use those skills, right?
Right.
And that's, I think, a lot of the way we do things around here is designed around, you know, helping, you know, establish trust between those of us who are in recovery and work here, you know, or in recovery and come here and volunteer, or, you know, the people in the 12-step meetings and whatnot. But
right.
And with you all, you know, with you all being, I guess, the new people in here. And I mean that with love, because I was in that position, like,
right.
You know, here
yeah,
I
yeah.
and I'm the guy. I'm the guy who walked in here and was like, I know everything.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you think I'm annoying now? I don't think I'm annoying now, but I certainly must have been annoying when I first got here, because
I think we all are.
Well, maybe.
I know I was.
You might have thought you were annoying.
Well, annoying or just plain pissing people off. Like, this guy's got, man, I don't know what Bobby's going to do, man. I mean, this dude's all over the place, man.
Well, so I noticed this among staff, because now I've been on staff for over 3 years, right?
Right.
And I noticed this among staff and sort of where we are as far as length of time here and maybe even length in recovery. It's like, you know, at some point, especially, you know, when you live in housing, it has another dimension. If you're a staff and you live in housing, it adds a dimension of emotional attachment that comes from interactions with
right, the
with,
bond yeah, that you build
the bonds right
yeah
exactly, you know. And whether you even live in the same house or not, I mean, there's still, you know, there's a constant, there's 15 houses, there's this constant network of things
involved, and even more
yeah
yep.
And so maybe it is helpful to be slightly removed, but it's also helpful for me to remember that, you know, when I first came in, it was really helpful to have people around me who not only understood where I was, but had perspective, you know, were understanding and not judgmental of it. This person's going through it and in some maybe some physical pain, certainly emotional pain. There's not many of us who come here without emotional pain. You know, this person who's coming to me is in pain and they're not acting their best self right now. Right. I don't need to take how they come at me personally right now.
Yeah, y'all do a good job with that, man.
I think a lot. Yeah,
y'all do. Because the way we were acting or when we first get here is, it's ridiculous. Like, I mean, you know, I mean, it's expected, but it's not right. But that's, you know, that's what addiction will do to you, man. It will change you. It'll make you ignorant. It'll make you angry. It'll make you not give a shit. But y'all are very patient, man. And y'all got some hope shots with y'all, man. Y'all really make us see that there is light at the end of the tunnel, man. I feel it from a bunch of y'all.
Appreciate that. I think there's a really good I think there's an atmosphere here, you know, among all of us, the alumni who come to visit, you know, the participants, of course, and and the staff, and I think there's just an atmosphere of community that we continue to build and grow and help each other, you know, balance each other with my character defects, my skills, and what's the opposite of a character defect? Oh, geez. Yeah, all of us sitting here struggling. There's a word. I can't think of it. Think of it later. But, you know, the opposite, you know, my character defects and my my assets, you know, like they're balanced with the character defects and assets of another person here, you know, and whether it's a staff member or whatever. I think it's a really neat community that we build here. So I want to know.
Okay.
Tell me about the daily stuff here. Tell me what it's like on the daily. On a regular Tuesday here at the Mixion Foundation, how does Bobby begin his day? Let's walk it through, and I want step by step. You can exclude any of the more disgusting little things, but
right.
I want from the very beginning. You wake up. What time is it? What's your thought? How do you get out of that thought? What are you doing?
From today's point of view,
let's do today. Talk to me about this morning.
Okay, so today you wake up at 7 o'clock, man. You make your bed. You brush your teeth.
Wait, you make your bed while you're in bed?
Well, I get out of the bed.
Well, see, I want that level of detail. Talk to me.
So when they tell me to get up, I don't get up.
That's what I want. Okay.
Right. I sit there for 5, 9, 15 minutes tops, and I'm thinking, oh, these motherfuckers, man. Here we go. Another day of this bullshit. All right. And so I'll sit there. And then whatever the word
is. Now this is at 7 o'clock-ish.
Yeah.
Nobody at any time at like 4 o'clock in the morning runs through the halls of the building.
Oh.
Well, no, but nobody's...
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, but nobody's running around going, trees, right?
No, but there is somebody sleeping 3 feet to the left of me that at 5:30 in the morning, this one just screamed out, no! Woke me up. He just talks in his sleep.
It's
it gets a little weird, but he's got night terrors or something, but yeah. But yeah, get up. Don't want to get up, but I get up anyways. Make the bed. Then
you make the bed as soon as you get out of bed?
Half the time. No, I go smoke a cigarette, and then I come back and I make it. Get dressed, brush my teeth. Then I do my chore, as long as it's not the bottom basement bathroom, because I've been on that way too long, man. And that's the worst chore. And I'm just not gonna do it every day.
Do you take your shower at night or in the morning?
At night.
Okay.
Yep. And then I grab my food for the day and pack it in my backpack, make some coffee or grab a water or grab an orange. I sit on the front porch, listen to music, smoke a cigarette, wait for the guys to get ready. Then we come over to the church every morning. We do 8:30, a little kind of 10-step kind of thing. What is it, feelings check?
Yeah, morning. We call it morning meditation.
Morning meditation. Tell it, you know.
What is he? He's been reading out of a book. What's that book called?
Just for today? Is that?
No, yeah, it's one of the books.
Or Reflections, or there's so many of them, man. I've lost track.
Oh, wait, it's not a book that he reads out. He's been printing out those.
Yeah,
he
gets little sayings and scripts from all over the place.
Ponderances of the day.
Daily ponders.
Daily ponder. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Which has the just for today. The daily reflection and some other things.
Up,
yeah,
so,
I like that.
Yeah, we do that, and then after everybody says, you know, who you are and how you're feeling for the day, we do chores.
Yeah.
And everybody does their chores. Then you go smoke after that. And then from that point forward, man, it's every hour is a meeting for an hour. You get about, what, 10, 15 minute break, and then you're meeting it up all day long. That's basically what it is. And then on the weekend, if we take care of our responsibilities and don't do nothing stupid, we get to go do something cool like bowling or baseball or something like that. But yes, a lot of meetings till about what, 4 o'clock?
4:15.
4:15. Yeah. Then we leave, go back to the house if you want to eat, shower, whatever you want to do. And then normally it's either 6, 7, or 8. We come back for another meeting or two for the night. So yeah, buckle up because you're going to do some meetings if you're going up in here, buddy.
Well, you're in the intensive program. So how much TV do you get to watch at the house?
Oh, shit, let me think about it. None, because there's none TVs. No electronics, no TVs. It's just you, yourself, and yourself. And you're thinking, and you're forced to talk and bond with people. And I guess it's part of why they do it. They make you use your brain for once, you know? It makes sense to me, even though I didn't like it at first, but it's not that bad.
You'll appreciate it after, actually. It may not seem like it, but having your phone is nice.
Yeah, man. Everything that I said that I hated about this place, I hated about y'all. I wanted to, you know, I just didn't give a shit. I wanted to leave. This is fucking stupid. This is dumb. Why I gotta do this? Yo, this person is talking for 20 minutes about something I don't care about. It doesn't affect me. You're sending me to the healing place with these freaking psychopaths for what? Everything that was getting on my nerves. They didn't give me my medication in time. Oh, you threw me in a reciprocated withdrawal. Yo, these people suck, man. At first, McShin, I was ready to fight everybody. The staff, Jesse, big bald master splinter, the captain. I was like, man, you suck, bro. You got me. I'm sick as hell. You ain't doing anything for me. I was ready to like just smack him, and he's like, no, man, you'll be all right, man. And I'm like, man, this is crazy. Y'all are just unorganized. Y'all are the worst. I don't know who the hell is running this shit. But it turned out all that shit was a blessing because it made me stronger. It made me patient. It made me more durable. It made me not want to put my hands on people. It got me through. And it definitely was a benefit, man. All that stuff happened for a reason. And whether y'all were right or wrong or indifferent or whatever, it added up to getting me where I'm at right now. And I'm grateful. I really am.
I think of the several conversations in my office where I've probably prattled on for more than 20 minutes. And I wonder, I wonder if I've been part of that problem there for a couple times.
Mama, no, your delivery, the way you talk, is that you grab attention, man. It's, you're not one of those ones.
I'm looking for validation over here. Don't get sucked into my need to be validated over there. That's what art is for.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
I'm a people pleaser, so you can't believe in that. Remember that.
That's funny. Okay, so I'm glad you've identified because you are definitely a people pleaser. I see that in you.
Yeah,
art is not a people pleaser.
I can see he has a serious? Don't really care what you're talking about face. So
I don't see you as a people. Well, yeah,
he's
I suppose
at,
you
look,
are.
He's just like, I don't really
he
care what you say.
He wants to be. You're hurt that I'm not identifying you as a people pleaser. We need to have the second camera on you. Can we do that?
Yeah, for the next show.
We'll put you in the corner there?
Yeah, sure.
Let's put baby in the corner.
In the corner, always, yeah.
I like that. That'd be cool.
Life story,
yeah. Oh, poor Art.
I know.
I'm so glad you're here, man. I am so happy you're here. I'm glad you're on the show today, too, man. This is fun.
Man.
We had something else scheduled for today, and you know, life on life's terms, and something came up, and yada, yada. And you know, I kind of looked at Art, and you know, without going into a whole long story, too late, right? I just went downstairs.
Spill the beans, man.
Well, I was looking for a different. I wasn't looking for the John sitting next to you. I was looking for the other John, who I hadn't met yet in person.
The new one.
Yeah, I haven't met him yet in person, but he found us watching the show on tablets. So I thought, well, let me grab this guy and put him on the show. But I don't know who he is, and I was like, I don't want to feel like going out all the way to the park, and I don't. I want something easier.
Give the new guys a break, man.
Well, yes, and yeah, there are people I've done that before. We have grabbed people and like walking in the door. You know?
Yeah, I mean, some people are just down for it, but
some people. Well, that's what we ask, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I would have. For the most part, we'll bring anybody.
I feel like
on.
He probably would have did it, and if he wouldn't have, he would do it next week probably.
I'll talk to him again. I'll talk to him. I have to meet him first.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah. But, you know, all that to say, you know, we have these incredible opportunities here at the McShin Foundation to figure out what recovery means to us, you know, individually.
Right.
And as a community. Now, of course, we are, you know, an abstinence-based program, and we're abstinence-based for many reasons. One giant reason is, I mean, it's we do work with a lot of probation officers, and you know, we work with the justice, right, the criminal justice system. So, you know, we maintain an abstinence-based program, and it's what works for the majority of us here. So it's what works, right, for us, and that's what we talk about. And you know, as a person in recovery who does recovery advocacy, we recovery advocates, you know, look at other ways of having, you know, doing recovery, which may not be abstinence-based.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And when I say abstinence-based, I need to put a big giant asterisk there, because a lot of people would probably say, you know, being on MAR, MAT, you know, medically assisted treatment or recovery wouldn't be considered abstinence. I'm not having that debate. Well, if that's your belief, fine. Then McShin is not abstinence-based. We're abstinence-based and harm reduction in that respect. But that's, you know,
neither here nor there.
It's not. Yeah, exactly. I'm staring across the street. I'm watching somebody walk, and I'm thinking, I think I know that guy, because these blinds are usually not down. And so now, and
focus, Nathan. Focus.
It's tough, man. Squirrels everywhere. Squirrel. Sometimes literal squirrels. But I say that, you know, so here we are in this program, right?
Right.
You know, and I remember, you know, because I started out in one of our step-up houses. I never lived in the intensive men's program house. Mm-hmm. One of my first resentments toward this place, I joke about that, you know, a lot. And I probably would have bucked too, and I would have wanted the phones. And back in the day, if you were living in housing and you didn't have a job, actually, it didn't matter. Back in the day, you could not be in any of the houses between the hours of 8:30 in the morning and 5:00 in the afternoon.
What do they want you to do? Go to meetings?
Go to a job. Or if you're not in a job, come here for the groups all day. Mm-hmm. Or go find a job. You know, right. Just go do something productive with your life. Right. Yeah, I mean, I say that flippantly, you know, go to a job. But reality is, it's like one of the biggest giant symptoms of our disease is isolation. You know, and what happens is sometimes, you know, in the housing, there's a huge chance for individuals. I'm one of those guys, man. I was joking earlier with you. I'm like, I'm actually a lot more introverted than you might think. Mm-hmm. You know, like I go home on the weekends and I sit in a ball alone most of the time, you know, and it's not this isn't an oh, poor me thing. I need that time,
right, like,
to recharge. The point of this. So back then, back in my day, when I was a participant here, you know, you had to be up here, or you had to be out looking for a job, or you had to be at work.
Right.
And so, you know, we got up here. I'd come up here, and first thing in the morning, they're supposed to send around a basket in the morning to pick up phones. But I don't think there's anybody here in the morning that's not intensive, so you don't have your phone, so they don't do that anymore, do they?
They do.
They do.
Yeah, but John, he just says, "Got a phone? Give it to me." And he just puts it under his seat. So.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, we used to have this basket's probably still down there. And a lot, because they were non-program participants. We're both yawning here. Let me land this plane here. What the hell was I getting at?
I don't know, man. I'm just waiting on you. Deliver it.
Oh, my God. Where am I going, bro?
Grab the wheel.
You have no idea, do you?
I have no idea.
I know, right? I was getting...
No, you're something about not being able to be at Scott House or in the intensive house.
Yeah, so I had my phone. I was getting that.
You resented.
I did. I resented it. I resented not being an intensive participant right off the bat, because when I got here, the guys at that house were really tight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at any of the houses, there's an ebb and there's a flow, mm-hmm, to the way things go here.
Right.
You know, each house, you know, especially if there's like a new house leader change, you know, there might be this... There's always gonna be
constant change, man.
There's constant change, and you know, when we get into a position where somebody can be, you know, a peer leader or a house leader for a while and grow into it, you know, learn, you know, how to work with people, you know, mm-hmm, to be helpful and not harmful,
yep,
in all the different ways,
yep,
you know, and it's a beautiful thing, you know. There's been, and so at the time there was a really, really good house leader. He's still a really good friend of mine. And it was a really good house, and I was really bitter that I wasn't there, you know, in that house, because those guys, they were doing stuff, they were having fun.
Part of it.
I wanted to be part of that, and I would go home to the step up house, and everybody had a job, and
nobody's
had
there.
They had
no
their
bonds,
girlfriends
and stuff. Talk to.
Yeah, except for Justin, who I'm pointing over here. Justin's not there anymore, but Justin, who was the producer before Art, he was my first house leader, and we really bonded. We got close. But I would come up here. My point, all this to say this. Ha ha ha. Y'all have your phones taken away, right? So right. I didn't have phone service because, broke, drugs, all that stuff coming out of jail.
Right.
But I did have two beat up phones. Mm-hmm. And bless her heart, there was a staff member back in the time, and I'm not going to call her out, but she knows who she is. She would give anybody the Wi-Fi password. We weren't supposed to do that. We're still not supposed to do that. But she would do it. And I had both of my phones, had the Wi-Fi password
Mr.
on
manipulator.
Them. Oh, yeah.
Got them.
So I would come in the morning, and to receive services at McShin, that's still the rule. To receive services at McShin, you do need to turn in your phone, right? I would put one phone in the basket, and I would keep one phone on my, in my
phone. I tried that old trick. Yeah. I brought in three phones. And I gave them all to him.
Did you have a phone when you got here?
I had three.
I mean, did you hide a phone when you got here?
So I originally gave it all to him.
So what happened?
But then, so what had happened was I spazzed out one day. I ran here. I was like, I need to send somebody some money. My girlfriend, somebody on Cash App. Let me see my phone. Really, I just snatched all my stuff and was like, I'm leaving. And then I didn't leave, though. I got in my car. I thought about it. I came back. But when I gave them the bag back with three phones, it was missing one. And I was hoping that they didn't know that somebody had brought actually three phones. And then, anyway, they go back to the house, and I got my main phone on me, and I'm just, like, mad or whatever. And then I hear, Bobby, give me that phone. Kevin coming in there trying to get the phone from me. I said, man.
That was a fairly good.
He was like, I ain't got time to wait on you, man. He was like, you messing my day up. I was like, man, you getting on my nerves. He was like, you getting on my nerves. I'm trying to go home. I was like, bro, you pissing me off. I'm over here plotting on my next relapse, and he's over here getting in my way. I'm like, man, this dude's getting on my fucking nerves. But, yeah, that's the little phone story.
I like it.
Yeah, man.
The phone gets, the phone is the biggest, probably the biggest bone of contention among a lot of the participants, the giving up the phone part, whether it's in the 28-day program or whether they come in here to receive service, and that becomes one of the biggest things.
Yeah, people get real defensive, like, what? You're taking my phones. But it makes sense, man. Come on now. We're addicts, man. We're trying to get clean. He wants to have our phone with the dealer's number and all the connections and all the distractions. And
what I love too is I love watching and seeing I do love watching the game. There's a sick little part of me that's like, sit back and watch for a while.
I mean, it's fun. It's a show. You see the craziness.
It is a bit of a show.
It's interesting.
It's interesting from all the different levels. And
everybody likes a little drama.
Well, what I mean, though, is, I see people, lend their phones out.
The growth or what?
I love seeing the growth. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was going darker. But I do like what you're saying.
Go back, though. Go back to the dark street.
I do want to, because I want to highlight this. And it's fun. And then I realize how serious it can be.
Yeah, and it can be. And that's how I've experienced it here already a couple times, man. Myself with other people.
Yeah.
I was that guy at first. Then I'm not that guy. But then I see other people trying to do it.
Yeah.
And it's not a joke anymore. And it's nothing I want to participate in, even in a conversation. I need it as far as away as possible. And I ain't even playing for a second with mine, though.
Yeah.
Like, they got to go.
There's a line that at some point anybody who stays here long enough has to, in Nathan's opinion, Nathan's little humble opinion, that there's a line we have to cross at some point between the, okay, I'm here and now I'm going to invest in the community. And what I mean by that is, I'm not going to take the shit from the people around me. Like I'm not going to co-sign bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
I see people. One of the biggest things for me is look, if you have your phone, if you're allowed to have your phone and you have your phone, don't give it to somebody else to use.
I agree.
Because I'm going to come at you with all kinds of stories. I need to call my mom. I need to call my girl. I need to get that money to my girlfriend. My PO, blah, blah. I said, we got phones in these offices up and down, three flights of phones. And the reason I'm so adamant about that particular one is because, I know somebody who did that.
Yeah.
His brick is right there on the memorial garden.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, he might have been able to find drugs. I mean, I'm sure he would have been able to find drugs if he hadn't made that still, phone call. Man, it's like it's those little, when I talk about those moments, you know, it's those moments where, damn, you know what, where I have an opportunity to think again. Because my first thought is not always the best thought. Right. One of the biggest things I am always grateful for is that my first thought is not always, does not have to be my last thought. Mm-hmm. I talk about that all the time.
Yes, you do.
Well, yeah, thanks. And you know, I do that first thought thing, but, you know, I need to put barriers in front of me, sometimes physical barriers in front of me, you know, whether it's to remove
the phone. You say it all the time, man. You give yourself a chance to think about a better decision to make, you know, give yourself a chance to do the right thing instead of the first thing.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Which is why we take away the phones.
Yeah.
You know, which is why we suggest, you know, leave the girls alone.
Yeah, man. Yeah, they'll get you in trouble. Oof. For sure. And plus, half of them probably active addiction or not, or recovery. And that's just another addict you're too close to, that that feelings get involved and stuff, you know?
Yeah, all that. So, were there, Art, I didn't see, were there any comments? I didn't see any. Oh, there were. Oh, Roger. Yeah. He says he's very proud of you, Bobby.
Shout out, Roger.
Roger, man. I thought you were coming to join us today, bro. What happened? But anyway.
That dude's killing it.
Roger?
Yeah, man.
He's got
inspirational, man.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. If you know his story, he's came a long way. Quickly.
Well, he'll come
60
on.
60 days. I mean,
we'll get him here to tell his story sometime.
Get him up here, man.
We'll get him in touch.
Get him on his comfort zone.
All right. Before we, you know, before the we put our trays in our full upright position and the seats and everything, and
for landing.
Yeah. Before we land this plane. You got any words of inspirational wisdom over there? I see you have a big old tossed salad over there. You see the salad over there?
Looks like, okay.
It's salad. I mean, it's a carrot cheesecake salad because that's what carrot cake is. Carrot cake is salad. It's got fruit. It's got vegetables. It's got nuts. It's got cheese. Mm. It's a salad. Mm. It's a carrot salad. Got any words for us?
Thanks for coming on, Bobby. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome, Mark.
And, good luck, man.
I appreciate it, buddy.
You're doing great.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, Bobby.
Yeah, brother.
Bobby.
How you doing?
35?
35, man.
Hey, you know flies. What? Come with me after this. I want to play a song for you.
Okay.
Any last thoughts, concerns? You want to shout anything out? You want to tell anybody, you know, who's thinking about making a change?
Yeah, man. I mean, I'll just say that I appreciate my girlfriend Lauren's on, my dad, my sisters, my nephew, everybody pushing me to help me to do this. but also to any new people, man. You know, they say y'all are the most important people. And, you know, everybody always says get clean for yourself and this and that. I say get clean by any means. To get started, it doesn't matter who you do it for a tree, do it for a piece of dirt, get clean, man. And then stay clean for yourself. It's the difference between life and death, and it's not a game. Your life is at risk. And, no matter how bad you feel at first, trying to get clean the first week or two, I was just there, man. And it's dark and it's sad and it's lonely. You don't think you can do it, but F all that, man, get through 2 weeks and your life will begin to change. And you might hopefully never look back, man, because I would never believe I feel this great that I do today from 2 weeks ago. And I do. And I'm so hopeful. I'm so hopeful. People that think they can't do it or whatever, you just got to get through 2 weeks, man. Get through 2 weeks. Your mind state will change. Your physical will change. You will be a different person. You'll have a whole new outlook. Buckle down and just do what they say and get through it, man. And it gets better over time. Keep coming back. More will be revealed. Is that what they say?
You know, I keep hearing, keep coming back. And there was a guy, this house leader, who was the house leader. It was called Dumbarton at the time, but Scott House. Mm-hmm. At the time, when I got here, he would say, just stay. I like that. So now when everybody says keep coming back, I usually, in my head, I'm just like, just stay.
Yeah, I don't really like to keep coming back. I like just keep showing up, man. Just keep showing up. Don't leave. Like, just fight through it. Like, time's going to fly whether you want it. Time's going to keep going whether you want it to go or not. It's not going to wait on you. It don't care about you. It's going to keep going through your bad days, your good days. And next thing you know, it's going to be 14 days. And you're going to be feeling like $1 million.
Art, I love it. Art, I totally forgot to put a commercial in the middle of the show.
Yeah, you guys' conversation was just flowing, so I didn't interrupt.
I totally forgot. Yeah, well.
Next one.
Yeah, well, next one, yeah. Man, for my blip. What happens at about 55 minutes? I can't talk anymore. So
I came in like that, so it's okay.
I love it. I love it. So, hey, listen. So, thank you for coming in today, Bobby.
You're welcome, Nathan.
Appreciate you, Bobby N.
Appreciate y'all for asking.
You know what I like, Art? When I got an email from you earlier, there's a little circle that shows up next to your email address, and it says AA.
Nice.
And I love that.
And my son's initials are NAA.
Your son is a badass. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Art. Thank you, everybody watching, listening now and in the future. We are going to take a hiatus and not be doing a show this Thursday at 2 because we've got the McShin Foundation Golf Tournament Classic. I'm putting those words together, but I think they're in a different order. Look, man, we got golf going on Thursday. So Art's going to be out there photographing, taking some video, helping with the social media, making sure that we're doing all this good stuff. And if you're watching, and I know you're watching because, you know, or listening right now, and I know you may not be able to participate in the golf tournament, but we are raising funds, of course, for the McShin Foundation. So if you are interested in participating in the golf tournament fundraiser part of that, you certainly can, you know, reach out to us and talk to us about donations that you want to make. And you can, you know, honesty@mcshin.org, or you can hit me up. You can leave a comment here. We can reach you back. But, you know, it's going to be a freaking, I was going to say, we've said it a few times already here. Yeah, it's all right. Yeah. It's going to be a freaking great show, a great tournament on Thursday. A lot of fun, a lot of sweat. Art's going to be in the shade with a camera, you know, doing stuff, and we'll have fun with that. So we'll be back next Tuesday. Don't know what we got on for the show next Tuesday yet, but I'll tell you what, Art's got some great ideas. We got good people coming on in the next few weeks, and we're gonna do some great things. So take care of y'all selves.
Everybody take care.
Everybody take care. Mm-hmm. All right, stay in the herd. Word.
Honesty Liller. I am the CEO of the McShin Foundation and a woman in long-term recovery. Since May 27, 2007, I have not used drugs or alcohol. Woo-hoo! Thank you so much to the Richmond Times-Dispatch and all of our voters for getting the Herd podcast. Those podcasts are amazing. Not only has it helped thousands upon thousands of people in their recovery, as well as family members, but it has helped me in my personal recovery. I get to listen to them now in my car through Spotify and iHeartRadio. And it's just really, really important for us to be innovative in the addiction field and the recovery community. So when COVID hit, we had to be innovative. You know, we really had to think of like, what can we do to reach people that cannot go to 12-step meetings, smart recovery, faith-based, whatever, that we're shutting down constantly. So we were innovative here at McShin. Let's start podcast. So with Todd, John, Alex, and some other staff, you know, we all just kind of jumped in who can do what. And with Todd's lead and John's lead, the podcasts have been amazing and we're still doing them today. So I want to thank you for all of your votes and all of your energy and all of your support of our mission of healing families and saving lives. Thanks.